This is Sikkim 365 Radio. Text us at 254-339-1122. The Sikkim 365 Radio text line is sponsored by Riverbend Liquor and Wine, with the most extensive variety of craft beer in Waco, a hidden gem on Lakeshore Drive and 19th Street.
Dr. Michael Ackerman, Director, Wendland Smith Rice Genetic Heart Rhythm Clinic and the Wendland Smith Rice Sudden Death Genomics Laboratory at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, joins us on Sikkim 365 Radio. My God, that's a long title, which means you're involved in a lot of things. Dr. Ackerman, I know that you have a lot more important things to do than talk to us, but I did notice earlier today your tweets about what's happening with some of what are the concerns with conferences, and now two of them in the Power Five shutting down. Can you try to explain myocarditis and what that really comes from and how much of that is associated to COVID?
Yeah, and first, thanks a lot for having me on your program. Full disclosure, my son's a junior at Baylor University, so I Sikkim Bears.
Oh, cool.
Had no idea.
Myocarditis?
Yeah.
So that's probably the most important title, is I'm a dad. So myocarditis really is heart muscle infection. And so the heart muscle can be infected by many, many different viruses. The annual flu virus, influenza, can cause influenza myocarditis. And we've known for months now, that this particular virus, SARS-CoV-2, that can cause COVID-19, can easily infect the heart muscle. That's not new. We don't know what's the extent of it. We know that it must not be much, because 40% of all of us who get SARS-CoV-2 infection will be completely asymptomatic. But we and others have published for quite some time now that this virus can infect the heart muscle just like it can infect the lung cells. And so you can get viral-mediated myocarditis from this specific virus. You can get SARS-CoV-2-mediated heart rhythm problems. And so this part really isn't new at all. And so my concern this morning was really for the sake of my patients out there who have sudden death predisposing genetic heart conditions, for which we told them over and over again that they're not at increased risk. And I did not want them suddenly wondering, what's the deal here? Is their heart going to go crazy if it gets infected by this virus? And the answer is almost always, no, it won't.
So, I mean, how different is this? It's not really different than most other viruses, correct? When it comes to myocarditis.
Well, we don't know for sure whether this virus can more easily infect the heart muscle. We don't know the date compared to, say, influenza or adenovirus, the common cold virus. All of these viruses can do it. We know how this virus infects the heart muscle in terms of what it uses to hijack and gain entry into the heart cells. And it may be easier to do SARS-CoV-2 myocarditis than influenza myocarditis, for example. But we don't know that. And every year on college campuses throughout the country and the world, they will have their viral myocarditis cases due to influenza, parvovirus, adenovirus, Coxsackie virus, any of a number of viruses. But this obviously is the new virus in town, or at least the new virus since early 2020.
So, doctor, when the Big Ten, I guess there's been reports that they have, you know, perhaps up to like 10 players who are showing signs of myocarditis, that's not necessarily even COVID related. I mean, just to be clear, that could have been from, like you said, regular influenza or some other type of sickness.
It could be, but assuming that that athlete already had documented SARS-CoV-2 virus from the PCR test or the antibody test, I think one has to conclude that the reason behind their myocarditis is this COVID-19 mediated virus. I don't think one should conclude that it's probably a different virus lurking out there. I think that's a pretty easy 1+1=2 kind of connection to make. And I would spot them. But what I don't know is what exactly did they mean or do they mean by myocarditis? Is this a very sick athlete where we clinically suspected it? Is this an athlete because of the positive PCR test for the virus that they then quickly did all of the cardiac tests and showed that the cardiac MRI showed some signs of early inflammation? And are they calling that myocarditis? Are they myocarditis in heart failure where the pump is not working well? So under what's being called myocarditis could be, you know, a lot of shades of gray.
How much does, okay, it happened to Eduardo Rodriguez. I saw you posted that article from the Red Sox. How much does stuff like that, it happened to this one guy, is that dangerous to kind of fuel fires when it comes to things like this?
Well, anecdotes are powerful, aren't they? And sometimes anecdotes, stories, run well ahead and way faster than the evidence can catch up to and justify the anecdote or put the anecdote in perspective and say, yes, that's awful that the baseball pitcher has SARS-CoV-2 myocarditis. It's not a surprise because that's not a new finding. We know it can happen. But what's the context? Is that a 1 in 100? Is that 1 in 1,000? Or is that a 50-50 proposition? And we know, for example, that less than 1 out of every 10 COVID-19 cases in the United States are 22-year-olds or under. Less than 1 out of every 10. So you have to start putting that anecdote, which is a powerful symbol and story, and then see if the evidence will catch up to it and confirm it and say this is a big, big deal, or whether the body of evidence will say, yeah, this is an important anecdote and it can happen. And are we as a university or a town or a community prepared to mitigate the risk and navigate through and around it? Or do we have to wave the white flag and say we have to do a system shutdown because we're concerned that this is going to do a run through our campus or our community? And so what we do about the anecdote, I think there's room for good, healthy debate. And I think it needs to be clear to the audience that the anecdote is running way in front of the true body of evidence as it relates to the true risk of an athlete or a non-athlete getting SARS-CoV-2 myocarditis. I mean, this virus doesn't care whether you're an athlete or an artist as to whether it might have potential to infect the heart muscle and cause heart damage.
Dr. Michael Ackerman from the Mayo Clinic, by the way, at MJ Ackerman, MD, PhD on Twitter, earlier today, this morning, you have a tweet that says, if medical experts for the conferences that are college football conferences are using the JAMA, J-A-M-A cardio paper on cardiac MRI findings in COVID-19 patients as compelling for cancellation, that's a foul. The data does not support this. What is the is that kind of what you've been referring to, the JAMA cardio? What is that?
Yeah, so JAMA Cardiology is one of the JAMA journals, so very prestigious journal. I publish in that journal. I know the editors, great people, great journal. The senior author on the paper, Dr. Eike Nagel from Frankfurt, Germany, I haven't met him. I'm sure he's a great person. It's a very interesting study. But the interesting study is 100 individuals with COVID-19, median age 50. So, and they showed that when they did cardiac MRIs on those, that 78 of them, so 78%, had MRI findings that were abnormal, indicating the presence of cardiac muscle inflammation. And so that raised a real concern, and that is a concern. There's no sugarcoating that this indicates that the virus can clearly infect the heart muscle and cause inflammation and can potentially cause a full-blown clinical myocarditis where you don't need the MRI to make the diagnosis. Now, but that's where it's always dangerous to then take that study, well-executed, good study, and then quickly or immediately transfer it to, you know, red light, five-star alarm for 18 to 22-year-olds or for 12-year-olds because it's just not fair. It's not correct science. It's apples to oranges, and it might be apples to watermelons, comparing a 50-year-old COVID-19 patients, of which two-thirds of them were sick in some way, so symptomatic. Only 18 of them were completely asymptomatic and no symptoms, and then draw a conclusion that this virus, if it happens to infect one of our college kids, athlete or not athlete, that it will cause the same level of cardiac muscle damage if we got cardiac MRIs. We don't know that answer. That answer could be yes, it applies to the 22-year-old just as much to the 50-year-old, or the answer could be this is not connecting the dots at all when we look at 18 to 22-year-olds who have no symptoms but have a positive PCR test or who have the sniffles and go in and get a positive COVID-19 test. It doesn't mean at this point in time that 78 of them are going to have an abnormal cardiac MRI, 78%, indicating that they have viral evidence of inflammation and infection. And so this is what I mean about the evidence base running a little bit too quickly or a lot of bit too quickly to a generalization to a group of very healthy young men and young women who are on college campuses.
I was just wondering when you say that about, you know, this evidence is running too quickly, is that partly because we've only been in this for less than a year? How long does normal medical research take when it comes to something like this?
Well, this is unprecedented times, isn't it? So we're going to look back at all of our pronouncements and see how many of them were spot on, how many were way off. It's going to take months for the dust to settle to see how good we did. And I think credit to the universities. I'm obviously partial because I've been getting the emails from the president of Baylor, Dr. Linda Livingston, and I haven't met her, but shout out. I think she and her team have done an amazing job. As a parent, I feel like I've been very much kept in the loop. Enough so that my son will be heading back to campus. Not an athlete, but I think the moves that the campus have made are doing their best. Will it work? Will the universities have to cancel and send people home for remote learning? Time will tell. Will it have been a mistake to bring them back on campus in the first place? Time will tell. But I've seen enough to say my son's going back. And if he were an athlete, my son would be playing. But that is how I've concluded the body of evidence based upon my vantage point. But sound-minded people can probably come to a different conclusion, and that's okay. It's just that I want my patients to know that if there are reasons to not do football this fall, they need to be much more than SARS-CoV-2 causing heart muscle infection. They need to be reasons like we on our campus and in our conference, we're just not comfortable, confident in our social distancing strategies, in our testing strategies, in our reporting strategies, in our quarantining strategies. Then I would say, okay, thumbs up, you're making a very transparent decision. But if they try to pin the primary reason that this virus is just lurking to get every athlete or many athletes or a lot of athletes with damaging the heart muscle permanently, then I would cry foul and I would say there is just not enough evidence to justify you using that reason as the primary or driving reason to recommend cancellation of a season.
Doctor, I know there's so many unknowns. It's all very interesting. You're giving us great, great information. But we've seen with some of these conferences now, like the Big Ten and the Pac-12 saying, hey, we're going to attempt to do this in the spring. Is there any medical evidence thus far that indicates that somehow COVID-19, I mean, outside of the hope for a vaccine, but is there any evidence to suggest that this will be far less of a problem in the spring minus the vaccine? Or is that, I don't know, how realistic is that?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Obviously, that's kicking the can down the road, hoping that we're a whole lot smarter than we are now, and we will be, no doubt. I mean, we're going to learn from this university exercise across the country how good of an idea or not good of an idea was it to return 18 to 22-year-olds to college campuses across the country. Is that going to change the fact that right now one out of 10 cases are under 22 years of age? Is that going to increase as we convene students who may or may not do a great job of social distancing, mask wearing, washing hands, all the things that we know work, but they only work if you do them. So we're going to learn more. We're going to learn how many schools had to send the kids back home, and athletes and non-athletes. And then obviously we're going to learn about what is the extent of heart muscle involvement over these next 3, 4, 5 months as people are doing studies to reproduce or generalize the observation from Frankfurt, Germany in American patients who are not 50 years old but are 20 years old. So there will be much learned. And obviously, if we get a vaccine that is a grand slam and is a curative type vaccine like the oral poliovirus vaccine or the mumps, measles, rubella MMR vaccine, and if that's available by January, February, March, then we're in a completely different chapter of discussion. But if the vaccine either doesn't work, which we don't know yet, after all, we've been working for a long time for an HIV vaccine and there still is not one, or if it works but not great, kind of like the flu vaccine, then we all will be coexisting with SARS-CoV-2 for a long time, and we're going to need to figure out how and in what ways do we and live out this coexistence.
Well, I tell you what, I was told that you would be able to break down something that's very complicated and make it and put it in layman's terms, and I believe Paul and Craig.
Yeah.
And the reaction we're getting from a lot of people that are on our text line and Twitter, that you're killing it. And you got to understand that I was the one that was more worried about me understanding what you were saying probably than anybody else. I am not asking you at all to discuss the decisions that have been made today. But if you were the person representing a conference, is it fair for me to ask you what you would ask them to do?
Yes. I mean, I think that's fair. If I were involved in that way, I would simply say from everything that I've seen so far, if my son, who's a junior in engineering at Baylor, going to be heading down there in a week, if he were a university athlete, he would be playing if he wanted to play. I would see no reason at this point in time to discourage him or think that I am sending him into harm's way recklessly. And the next question you might quickly add to that is, yeah, but do you love your son? And I do. I love him very much. So from everything I've seen, I would not invoke the heart as the reason to cancel a sport. I could understand if the university said, we just don't have our house in order. We don't have testing in order. We don't know how to track and quarantine and isolate and test. Because after all, remember, my son got his kit from Baylor University in the mail. He will come sending that swab in. He'll arrive SARS-CoV-2 negative. As a non-athlete, that's it for him. Unless he develops symptoms and concerns and goes to or calls the hotline. That's not going to be the oversight of the athletes on a Division I university. They're going to have way more touch points. How are you doing? How are you feeling? What's your temperature? Are they going to be checking their temperature every day when they come to workout? So forth and so forth. So there's going to be way more oversight that a D1 athlete is going to get than a D1 artist or a D1 engineering major. And so I just think, if it's okay for my son to come on campus as a non-athlete, then he should participate in all the activities. And if he were an athlete and he said, Dad, I want to play, for me, as his father, my answer would be yes. And that would be my answer to any conference or any committee that asked my opinion on the matter.
We did not. When I contacted you by email, I surely didn't expect to hear back from you, and you did almost immediately. And then, of course, the people at the Mayo Clinic, they were fantastic. Tracy Klein contacted me as well. I did not have any idea. It's so random that I would just see your tweet, contact you, and then you have a son at Baylor. That's crazy. Is his first name Anthony? What's his first name? Because I just looked up on Baylor University, and I see an Anthony, but that there might be 20 of them. I don't know.
No, my son is Jen Ackerman.
Okay, all right, Jen Ackerman. Okay, well, we got to go. We got to eventually, hopefully, be able to chance to go see him, and hopefully it would be somewhere where he's able to get around, and so are we. Seriously, Dr. Ackerman, Paul, Craig, anything else from you guys?
I think that's good, yeah. I mean, I've learned a lot, and it's good to just have some non-agenda talk about, you know, what all is going on.
I don't know if I can get through your title again, though. I really don't. It's amazing. Dr. Michael Ackerman, director of the Wendland Smith Rice Genetic Heart Rhythm Clinic and the Wendland Smith Rice Sudden Death Genomics Laboratory at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. There's 100 other things he's attached to. Dr. Ackerman, thank you so much, and thanks to the Mayo Clinic for making you available on such short notice, and hopefully we were able to help educate some people today. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, David, Craig, Paul, thanks a lot for having me. And wear your mask, wash your hands, don't touch your face, and let's all stay corona-free for as long as we can.
You too.
Take care,
thank you.
And thanks for having me.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it, Dr. Ackerman. That's blown me away that his son's a junior at Baylor.